Stephen Bassett's back in the building. Welcome to the Evoke Bike Podcast, everybody. I'm Brendan Hauser. So Stephen Bassett was at the Evolo training camp. He's actually working with Evolo now. So I want to chop it up with him, just some basics about what they were trying to get out of him as a pro at the training camp for these younger athletes. And then we talk about coaching athletes, Stephen's plans for the upcoming year with Denver Disruptors. They're going to be doing a whole bunch of races besides the NCL crit scene. We talk about what Stephen calls simulation versus stimulation in training. Obviously some carb talk. Some of the things he's working on now, a little bit more zone 3 with feathering in VO2. And if you listen to the previous podcast with Stephen, he's not doing as much of the 40-20s as he used to. If you want to get nitty gritty, you can check out the topics below in the chapters. We obviously don't make a chapter for every topic, so it's better to just listen to the whole thing. Stephen always has a ton of gems to drop. We really appreciate you, man. Thanks for cruising through the podcast again. And everybody, good luck with your training and racing. We'll talk to you soon. See ya.
I thought when I saw you with Evolo, I thought that was like a funny joke. And I was like, oh no, you actually were there. And then I just realized you're on the website. What are you doing with these guys?
It just kind of happened. I gave Creed a call last August or so. So I kind of saw the writing on the wall that wasn't going to stay in Europe. So I knew he was on the ground in the US. So I wanted to pick his brain about the situation over here and which teams were doing what. So as we were talking, he was like, man, you should come kind of be a bit of a mentor to the younger guys. I think they've done it with Rob Britton in the past. Mm. And it's like, you know, just somebody who's, you know, halfway between his age and the guys to kind of help relay some of the messages they're trying to get across.
What are some of those messages?
Just kind of the basics of being a professional. I think it's just, you know, crossing your eyes and dotting your T's. but the low hanging fruit a lot.
Is that on the bike, off the bike, a mix of everything?
Yeah, I think a mix of everything, you know. These are all super young guys, so it's a U23 team, all under 23. So, you know, for a lot of them, it's new. Some of them are lifers like me, you know, they've been doing it since they were 12. But some of them, you know, one guy I think had been riding for like 18 months. So it's like, this is all kind of novel. So
yeah,
just some of the basics.
I looked through the roster. I've heard some of the names. I've raced against Brooks a couple times somewhere down in like the Georgia area. And I was like, wow, that's hilarious. This kid's 20. So he was like 12 when we raced. I'm envious of people that found the sport so early. That's really cool. I'm really curious, and maybe you don't want to talk about this on camera, mm-hmm. but the writing on the wall when you were in Europe, finishing up things with Rally, like how does that all, what was your mindset going through that? Are you cool talking about that?
That's fine.
Yeah. Like, do you start looking around in Europe, or are you like, I'm coming home, I'm kind of over this, or what's, you're 28 now. Is that right?
About to be 29. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's, I think.
And one more thing before you go in, sorry, people always say I cut people off.
No.
I know how strong you are, and I know people that have raced you know you're freaking insane. So I always think, I know maybe a lot of people that hear this aren't going to understand the context, but it's like, dude, if you can't make it, holy crap. Like, age, is this like just the connections? Like, yeah. So like, I mean, it's just not to blow smoke at you, but I mean, look back at what you did before you went over there. Look what you were doing at First Internet. And everyone's like, okay, dude, Stephen, go away. Like, we get it. So I think it's just, you know, it's hard for people to fathom, like, dude, Stephen's coming back. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just to add context for people that might not know, go look at how strong Stephen is before you say anything. So,
yeah, I think some of it's just situational. Like, the line between Pro Conny and World Tour is very small right now. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, you have like your Tudor, your Q365, your Lotto, your Israel, that are all basically World Tour teams. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not quite the same budget, but all the same resources. And so it's like you have those teams that can scoop up hitters. And then you have the smaller Pro Conny teams. You have your Caja, those type of teams. But they're kind of regional. So if you're not from the Basque country, mm-hmm. trying to get on Euskadi is not really going to work out. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of at the level where I was like, yeah, if I was as good as I am and from, you know, Valencia, right, this might work out. But as a foreigner, there's the barrier to entry seemed to be kind of one step away from where I am to stay there.
Okay. So how are you feeling about the vibe coming home? Going to be doing the NCL stuff? You going to mix up in like local road races? What are you thinking for 2024?
Yeah, I think all the NCL stuff, and then we pretty much do all the, you know, all the couple of major road races that we have in the U.S.
Okay.
Probably going to try and mix in a little bit more gravel. I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of feel out if that's something I want to pursue in the future. I'm not totally sure. I think it fits my physiology pretty well. But we'll see if that is interesting or not.
Right. Have you done much? You think you were going to start gravel racing? Did you not? Have you done much?
I've done a few just for fun. I've never really taken it seriously.
Okay.
So yeah, just the normal schedule pretty much of the US races.
So what kind of gravel catches your eye? Which events would you really like to get into?
I'm doing this Southern Cross one, a local one coming up, and then maybe like try this Belgian Waffle ride in Asheville to get a taste of some of the bigger ones and see what's going on there a little bit.
And that's kind of gnarly from what I've gathered, like on the skill. Are you good off-road?
I'm decent. I mean, yeah, I broke my collarbone at a gravel race last year, but in general, yeah, I think I'm, you know.
Southeast competent. Gravel? Is that the one you're going to?
No, I think it's kind of a standalone thing, part of some other mountain bike gravel series that I don't really know about. But
we could strike fear in a lot of people when they were like, oh, damn it, Steven's coming. Okay, maybe I'm not going to win. And then you're coaching, correct? Mm-hmm. So kind of bouncing all over the place. So do you see yourself going into coaching? Do you see yourself trying to stay in cycling if you end up, maybe you go the gravel route, maybe you don't? Or are you just kind of playing it year by year right now?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to be in coaching for sure. Pretty committed always as a part of my life. You know, it's like I've spent so much time figuring all this stuff out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of kind of information I have that we can kind of just skip a few steps for people.
Yes.
And then have the, you know, kind of the experience to know when to just take common sense and be like, yeah, of course you should rest. You're a little bit sick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how to convey those messages in a way that makes sense, because I've had to learn them all myself, you know.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, that's an awesome skill set to have of making it over there, racing in Europe, but then also you've kind of, for people, I just posted on Instagram, like the first podcast we did, you're into the training aspect that even if someone's not trying to be a pro, but they're just doing amateur stuff and maybe they have a 9-to-5 job, like you're into that. You're not just like this freak athlete who hasn't been paying attention to what he's doing. That's what I really liked about the first podcast. I think you had just said a lot of stuff that resonated for a lot of amateur riders also, which is kind of why I wanted to catch up about this training camp, because I was just curious what you're doing with the Volo. But also I think when people say, and this is maybe, I guess fours and fives do training camp sometimes too, but the number one thing is like, oh, we're going to go ride 40 hours over the next 3 days. Like, this is going to be the best training camp ever. And I love big volume. I try to like tamp it down to a realistic amount for people before they go. But maybe can you shine some light on more detail of like things that maybe Creed said, hey, this is what I want to get across to these guys. And they're a club team now, right? They're not.
Yeah.
Anymore. Club team. But they're doing all like the big races that they can get into. So maybe what are those guys thinking of? But then maybe also we chat about like, how does this relate to the people coming up? And then maybe just get into some general training stuff, because I realize a lot of camps are going to be over by the time we post this. But
yeah,
I'll definitely earmark this and repost for next year as people going through like winter camps. So let's kind of start with I'm curious, Creed has a huge history What when you were like, all right, I'm coming to this camp, what was his like big goal for you besides just like the general mentorship? Or maybe he was just like, yo, just go chop it up with these guys.
Yeah, it was pretty open-ended. I think I showed up at the airport and they're like, oh, what do you do? What are you doing here? And I was like, oh, I'm here to train with you guys. I thought Creed would tell you. But yeah, no, it's he especially I think this one may have been a little bit different for them because they were going into Valley of the Sun right after. So I think there was more of an emphasis on, you know, keeping a roof on things and keeping things a bit more under control.
Okay.
But then there was definitely still a bit of, I mean, I think that's a great part of a training camp is to do a bit of racing. Cause one of my big things is like I'm always telling people like stimulation versus simulation. So like, and the more you race, the less like simulation you need. So what I mean by simulation is like, okay, you're going to do like these efforts that are just like the last 5K of a race. You know, you're going to pretend you're going to be racing five people, or it's stimulation, which is stimulating the growth and stimulating the training. So stimulation might be just doing, you know, 4x20 zone three. It's not like anything super race specific. It's not doing 30-30s into the zone three. It's this is the thing I'm trying to improve. I'm trying to improve my threshold so I do this zone three. So I think there's a need for both. And I think different people in their careers have different needs for both. So like me, it's like, I've been racing a long time. So I don't need to do 15 race simulations to prepare. You know, I'm better served generally raising my level and then doing a little bit of simulation to just kind of get those sensations, get that last little bit. But so that's something I'm always toying with when I'm doing my intervals and stuff. It's like, okay, you could simulate a race, you know, you could go out and ride in the rain to get ready for racing in the rain, but does that make you better? Like, does that make you sick or does that make you tired or whatever? Where it's like, okay, you could ride the trainer and do all your intervals and be stronger for it. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a balancing act. And it's like, yeah, if you've never ridden in the rain, you might need to ride in the rain, but you know, it changes.
So this is actually an interesting, I guess, branch off that I'm immediately thinking of for the athletes that do six races over a year, maybe. They're like, hey, my first big race is in April. And they're like, so, and I have received emails where like, do you think I can do a training race in March or will that like throw off my training? And I'm like, dude, no, wait, hold on. I don't think you've been listening. Like, we want races before a race that you think you're going to do well at. So this is your simulation for those athletes. Is that correct? Like, would you definitely be pro, get in the super fast group ride, do a race sim, like something before your block of racing starts? Are you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, again, it depends on where you are in your career, you know?
Yeah.
If you're starting out, if you're, good you know, point. In your first couple of years of racing, I think it's 100% go to every race you can.
Okay.
And then as you kind of like start finding your level and start focusing in a bit more on certain things and you start weighing out all these things of what do I get and what does it cost?
Right.
The calculus changes slightly.
Let's talk about that. What are some of the, what does this cost and what do I get? Because it's very interesting that you bring this up because I don't want to talk. So like I went to Swam Classic and I was glad I went because I realized that my back was not ready to race. And so then I'm like, well, geez, I was planning to go to these other races. The cost to go, literally the financial cost, but also the time cost. I'm like, why would I go if I'm not going to race 100%? I should actually be spending my energy on rehabbing. So that's like one example for people. What are some of the things that you think of as athletes grow in their, what we'll call cycling career, like the costs and gains from going to the races?
Yeah. So I kind of think like, if you're not 95%, there's, and you don't have to go to the race, there's not a lot of point. Mm-hmm. That's me personally. I hate going to races when I'm not in shape, which is something like as a professional, you did all the time. You know, you might be sick, you might be, but you got to have five guys to start the race. Mm-hmm. So that happens all the time where you're like, well, I'm sick, but the next guy's throwing up, so I start the race. Mm. It's pretty common. So when you have the luxury of choosing your schedule without those kind of external things, you have to requirements, you can kind of pick a little more and focus a little bit more.
I didn't realize that you had to have five guys.
Oh yeah.
That's it. And it's just start. Have you ever started and just hopped in the car?
I don't think, yeah. I mean, that's very common. I think I've started half of a lot of bike races. if that makes sense. And then, you know, you just go to the first feed zone and stop when you know you're sick there's definitely been guys that have done 300 meters of a bike race. that's definitely pretty common.
So what about, I like, and I don't know, I'm trying to think real quickly on the fly if I've ever really done a training camp and gone into racing. So we started on the stimulation pathway. Is that something that you have picked up recently, or was this something that you've done in your race career as a pro? Do your training camps usually go into the first spring races, or do you guys do like a base only type camp, and maybe is there like another quote unquote camp before the racing starts? Or like, and I guess this is a really dumb question, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, you're in Europe, aren't you guys mostly riding together anyway? So what would really be like, oh, this is camp week, as opposed to like, yo, we're just riding a lot because this is what we do for our job?
Yeah, so probably like most pro Connie teams would have one big training camp, maybe two.
Okay.
And then pro tour teams and bigger pro Connie teams they've usually done two or three camps before they do their first race day.
Okay.
And so it might be like one of those is volume based and then one of them is more intensity. And they also break up into smaller groups generally. Like, you know, you have your classics group, and then within that, you'll have four guys riding together, six guys riding together. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have a climber thing that are all kind of doing separate things. So that's a little bit different, where like Evolo, like I was pretty impressed. It's like they all did everything, you know. It's you know, the full team, where even on rally or something, you wouldn't really see that.
So what's the, like, how do you feel about that? Because I would think that they're, or maybe people are just even more hyper specific than I give them credit for, that, you know, the classics types rider, or even just in the US, maybe the all arounder could glean something from the climbers and vice versa. Like there's some knowledge share going on, because you're not always just climbing. You're not always just like smashing 1 minute effort. Or is it more bonding with similar type riders, or how does that work?
Yeah, I think it's like, I just try to think of training camps as like not being that specific, you know. You might make your own training really specific, and then you have to kind of go into the training camp and be like, well, this is what we're doing.
Right.
And I don't know how Creed was like, yeah, if you think you can go ride 3,000 meters without getting fitter, I don't know who you are. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, if you go ride hard in the hills, you're riding hard in the hills, and it's generally good enough, you know. You're not going there to polish.
So he's saying, wait, so the way he said that, so it's like, as long as you're riding a lot, you're getting faster.
Well, it was like, yeah, I don't know anyone that can go ride 3,000 meters uphill hard without training. You know, if you're losing fitness doing that, you have, I mean, man, you should be at the, you should be at the tour if you can do that. Yeah, you should. Yeah, you're too good for this if you can get slow doing this, you know.
That's funny. What were some of the things that you felt like you passed on well to them, or things maybe that they were like, whoa, I've never thought about this, that they were pretty receptive to?
So I wrote down some stuff. I think I just try to get across like the low hanging fruit, which is easy stuff. So it's like, I noticed a bunch of guys like the first 2 days or something, like, oh, my knee hurts. I'm like, your knee hurts? Like, I don't think my knee has hurt since I was 19, you know, because I started doing the like 5 minute glute activations. And then a lot of it, I'm like, yeah, you should just like mechanically fix this. Like you need like the 1.5 degree wedge, and then you need the insole, and like these two $20 products will fix like 90% of knee problems. I've given so many people this advice. It's like, you go, you buy the wedge, and then you buy a specialized insole, and like, this is 98% of any setup that anybody will ever sell you.
But why not go back to what you had said before though? Like, that sounds to me more like the Band-Aid, whereas they should do the glute activation, the glute work, Like this is where I screwed up, in that I kind of stopped doing all the little things, and it's been a perfect storm. I don't use my glutes at all. Like, and I went to a PT here to get dry needling done. Yeah. And he was like, "Oh man, you are not working your adductors and abductors." And you know, I am guilty in that I like lifting. I like lifting heavy. So I sometimes skip over the easier stuff, which is foolish. It's like, you know, the one-legged things. And so in all of that, I'm kind of circling back and working with the PT, SoCal Bike PT, aka Glute Dopers.
He's good.
Yeah. And so Scout and I have been going through some things. We're going to make some videos. But so I don't know, wouldn't you say they should be doing that as opposed to wedging? Or is that...
I'd say they should be doing both.
Really? So why wedge? I don't know. What's the deal?
I'm not a physiologist or anything. But
do you use these? Do you use a wedge?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Because it's something, it's like 98% of people. I mean, I'm a little bow-legged, so it's like 98% of people need the little bit of wedge.
Huh.
And then it's just like, it's almost like you're giving yourself a margin for error. Where if you have a good insole, and so you don't have to work your muscles as hard to hold your leg up straight, you know, then there's a little room for other, you know, something else to go on and still be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like my knee tracks 100% perfectly, but it gets it within that range of, okay, it's within a few percent of ideal to where, you know, a little, you know, your saddle can slip 1 mil in travel or whatever, or you can jump on the other team bike and it fits a little different. So you kind of build yourself in that buffer with the combo of the exercises and just, I mean, it's like, why wouldn't you support your body correctly? You know, why That's wouldn't you keep the arch from collapse? Like why you don't want to work your arch? You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel the same thing about like cleat positioning. It's like, if you put your cleat, a lot of people have their cleats, you know, forward or right at the ball of their foot. And it's like, well, if you just put the cleat further back, you kind of take your glute out. Or you take your calf out and you work your glute more. It's like, you're not going to win a bike race doing calf raises. Like the calf is just not a good muscle for bike racing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, you could say like, oh, I just set this up and now my calves are so good at biking. But nobody's having a contest to see if your calves are good at biking, you know, if you're fast. So I think it's these things that are just like, yeah, it's just kind of basic, but also kind of like, yeah, this is kind of better. If it's better, we should kind of do it all the time. It's like, it's the same with eating, you know. It's like, if I eat a lot of sugar, I'm better. So why would I ever want to go on, like, I don't think I've ever gone on a, like, I just don't do low carb ever. I don't believe in it. It's like, would you tell your car to get better at running on empty? No, it's like, I'm going to run my car on empty all the time. And then maybe it'll learn that it doesn't need the gas. It's like, it's, you can tell yourself if you want that, but I think it's like, yeah, if this is the easiest, best way to do something, that's what we do all the time.
I like that.
Yeah, I kind of went off there.
No, I like, dude, we have I think a few podcasts afterwards, I even said to people before we like got on the camera, I was like, all right, and Stephen Bassett went on these things we call tangents. So like, please go on those, go down like the roads. What are some of the other low hanging fruit that you saw with these guys?
Sometimes it's like, oh, I didn't feel like eat, you know, I'm a little no feel good today. You know, didn't eat enough. It's like, the keeping the sugars up is the cardinal rule. That's the number one rule all the time. So it's like, yeah, sometimes you're like, I don't really feel like eating a bagel. It's early. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. You just got to eat it. One granular thing I noticed was sometimes it was like the guys would make the protein pancakes. And it's like, yeah, I'm always telling people like people love protein pancakes. And I used to do them too. But then it's like, if you use the regular pancake, that's like pretty much 100% carb, and then you add the Greek yogurt to it, it's like the carb comes first and then you add protein. So I think sometimes if you do those pancakes, it's at the expense, you're getting protein, which is good, but it's at the expense of carbs. So it's like, you need to calculate that into your intake to make sure that you get, it's like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I keep going back to this thing with, like, this is something else I was telling those guys. It's like, if you're going to a race and you're worried about stuff, it's like, are you fed? Are you watered? And are you rested? Like, are you, like, basically, it's like, this is a, you're now like a show pony. You are now like an, it's like, you have to, if you have these three things, you can perform in bike racing, you know? Like, you can, you know, if you slept 3 hours, it's not ideal, but you can do it, you know? But as long as you, like, cover the, it's like the basics, the basics, the base, you know, the fundamentals, the basketball.
I'm just laughing at show pony. What's, how do you feel if you have a bad night's sleep? Say you're on the road or you're staying at a host house or whatever, you have a bad night's sleep. I'm just curious on this. How does going hard feel to you? Or what is the lack of sleep? Like, how do you manage that on race day? You're like, okay,
yeah,
I slept like crap. I got 5 hours of sleep. What's your, do you have like a thing, like anything in your head to like try to alleviate that mentally or even physically?
Yeah, I mean, typically, I feel like you'd be surprised at the amount of caffeine that's going around European races, where it would likely be like, you know, two coffees in the morning, a Red Bull at the start, another dose of caffeine. I'm big on doing the caffeine earlier in the day, like 2 to 3 hours before the finish. This is something Gavin Mannion taught me. It's like the, it takes kind of 40 minutes to peak, and then it's good for like 2 hours.
Okay.
So like slamming the caffeine gel 15K to go is kind of too late. It's just going to inhibit your sleep that night.
So just so I heard that correctly, 2 to 3 hours before the finish. So you're taking it 2 to 3 hours before the finish, or you're taking it even before that, so it peaks?
No. Yeah. Kind of taking it, you know, 2 and a half hours before the finish.
So really then say you have a 4 hour race. Because that's kind of like longest US road race, and I'm US biased. So caffeine at the start, caffeine at 2 hours, any in between that?
No, that'd probably be fine. And that's probably what I do.
Let's get super granular milligrams. Like, are you doing a 250?
No, 100 to 150.
Okay. Yeah. I'm super sensitive to caffeine. So I'm always sheep. There's a lot of races I don't even use it, especially if it's later for the sleep thing. But I know some people are just going crazy with it, it seems, these days. They're like, oh, I got this 250 gel. I'm like, how many did you take? Three? I was like, that's so much caffeine. You're going to be on a bender. They're like, well, it's 7 o'clock. I think I'm good. I'm like, whoo. But some people, they can drink a coffee and go to bed. That's just not me. So
no.
What other, any other low hanging fruit that not, maybe not even with the Evolo squad, that you just think athletes that you've thought of where you're like, man, how are people missing this? Those were good ones.
Yeah, that's kind of, those are kind of my big three ones.
What do you think about, so since racing starting, and if we could, obviously this really depends, I think, a lot on how fit someone is at this point of the year, similar to what you said before, how far they are within their, like, quote unquote race career. But there's a lot of things going on in the Southeast right now. I was looking at this athlete's calendar, and he's got, you know, three races. Like, it's a Saturday, a Saturday, a Sunday race. He's got a week off, and then it's like an Omnium. There's just a lot of races coming. What were you, how would you approach that? You know, the race is obviously high intensity. Would you do another workout maybe on Tuesday, maybe something on Wednesday? Kind of too varied per person to even like jump in on that? Or what do you think?
Yeah,
about that?
I think generally the mistake you would make is you would do the race, an easy day, intensity day, Wednesday, easy, easy. I think what happens is you start to lose the base. So it would be better to do like, you know, 3 to 4 hours in the middle.
Yes.
Just to keep that base up. Because it's kind of like the, you know, being fed comes first. It's like doing some zone two comes first. Like, this is your baseline. You have to do this before you can continue with anything else.
I love to hear that, because also I think there's, you had mentioned like a 4x20 tempo. Excuse me. I don't have someone do that much because my people I'm thinking of are just not at your level. That would wax them pretty well.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's not recommended for civilians.
For civilians. But I would say I had somebody, you know, he does 3-hour rides during the week a lot of times. And I was like, yo, this Wednesday, can you jam in this 3-hour? Do like a 3x10, 3x15? Because Saturday's race is kind of like a B-level race, doesn't care about it too much. And similar thing, because otherwise the hours tank. And we look over the next 6 weeks like, dude, you haven't really ridden that much. And unless you're a crit boy that's only looking for big 1-hour events as like your big races, I should say. Yeah, it's, I think that is a trap that people fall into. It's too much tapering. It's never enough endurance. One guy had commented to me, he's like, dude, I'm racing 5 hours on Saturday. Should I really do a 3-hour ride on Sunday? I'm like, yeah, if you can, it's not, I mean, you got a whole other 7 days before you're racing again. It's not just race and rest. So what's, what else you got kicking around? Let's chat about NCL. Has your training changing at all, or is, how do you, I mean, you're good at crits anyways. This is me. You're maybe the bad person to ask. And maybe if you're thinking of gravel, maybe that's similar to like the Euro road race is just long and hard, but are you switching anything up for kind of the shifting calendar or just staying with the Steven Bassett specials?
Very, very little. Cause I'm kind of like, okay, if I want to be the fittest bike racer possible, and we know a lot of volume makes me fit just because the races are shorter. It's like, it's not like you like multiply your race time by X to get how much volume you should ride. So I'm doing pretty similar volume.
What are you doing these days?
You know, 20, 22.
Cool.
As a baseline, kind of. I'm definitely doing, yeah, like I talked about, like more zone three. So more time at intensity and like stretching that out a bit. And then just kind of feathering in a bit of VO2 and, yeah, nothing that crazy. Nothing
wild. You're still a 30-30, 40-20 guy from last time we talked?
Not as much. I think I'm doing them more organically, just like with terrain and stuff, but not as much. Sometimes into the occasionally into the tempos, but yeah. I think I'm leaning more on the model of we're raising the general ceiling and then, you know, yeah, it's just like we talked about. It's like, yeah, if your race has like a hill at 20%, like you could go and ride like 60 RPM up this hill at 20%, or you could just do normal training and like get fitter and then the hill will be easier.
Yeah.
So it's like you're generally just trying to be fitter and then all obstacles come back to you, you know?
I like that. How do you feel about race specific training? Because that is a slippery slope. And the reason that I don't want to push back sounds too not angsty, but that I'm disagreeing with somebody, but they'll be like, oh, well, there's this 10-minute climb. And I said, well, what happens if people attack like 5 minutes out? I'm like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, people might not wait for the climb. That's actually your teammate. I use him as an example, and he was coming off an injury. So of Ryan Roth, when you were on Silber, came to upstate New York. I don't know what he was doing. I think somebody said he had a girlfriend somewhere. I'm like, yo, dude, someone from Silber's here. And it was maybe a 12-minute climb. And I'm like, oh, this guy's going to win. And someone's like, no, I think he's injured. So anyways, I was not waiting to let this dude just blast us all on the climb. So two turns before the climb, there's this little rise. And I took off with three dudes and people looked at Ryan to like, you know, he's the guy in the silver kit, like chase these guys back. And they didn't. And it was like it's an example I like to give people because don't wait for the thing that everyone's waiting for, surprise them. And so it wasn't this 12-minute effort. So the reason I say all this is if you're going to a race, you're like, oh, well, there's this one feature. It might not be the feature. So how do you like, this race specific training can be very misleading. And so I love what you just said about, you know, just raise all of the fitness, be kind of ready for anything, because who knows, that race could have come down to a sprint or it could be, you know. So have you always looked at training that way, as just general, just be the best Steve in all the different ways possible and the race will just come to you?
I think it's changed with age a bit. So yeah, kind of one thing I like, I don't know. This is not a specific number, but I kind of say like, you got to do something 8 times to get better at it.
Going on.
So it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, you want to do some motor pacing, and the motor pacing is going to give you the leg speed and it's going to give you the race rhythm, but you're going to do one motor pacing session a month, you know, twice. And it's like, well, would you be better served doing more climbs, you know, 2 times, 3 times a week? So it's kind of like, yeah, if this race ends on a 10 minute hill and it's like, yeah, you could blow your load doing, you know, 10 minute efforts over and over. And I used to do that for Joe Martin, like when I was like much younger, 19, 20, I would go at 500 until I blew up. And then eventually I could just do it. But, you know, it was many years later that I could just do it, where I would have probably been better served doing something else, not quite as hard, that would have stimulated the growth, that would have pushed me to where I could do that 500 for 10 minutes instead of just, you know, trying to willpower my way to that, you know, arbitrary number.
Yeah, that's, oh man. So that's interesting. To kind of play off of that, I'm trying to think of what sparked this. But I was doing some VO2. I'm a very classic like 5x5 guy. I kind of, in maybe the past 2 years, got into doing some that are like a really hard start and then more like 110%, but doing like 8, 9 minute ones. And then I was looking, and I don't know what really sparked this, but I was like, hey, I'm going to do a TTE. Just, okay, here's the number, and I'm just going to ride until I blow up. And then the next one, say I get to like 7 minutes, I'm going to pin the number again, and maybe I only get to 5 minutes. And it's actually been a kind of effective workout in a very, I'm not just like staring at the watts knowing I got to go 5 minutes. It's like, oh man, no, I can go another 30 seconds. Like this kid, I just got to go another 30 seconds. And so it's interesting to hear you say, like, you just did this thing till you blew up and you would do something different. There's just so many ways to do intervals that I think maybe that's what I'm stumbling. I'm like, oh, this kind of seems fresh after training in different ways for so long. 30s never resonated with me. So for VO2 max, I'm like never doing that. I just hate them, which is, I probably should do them more then. But, so a lot of tempo. What are you doing threshold wise? Do you do steady state? Do you ever ride at threshold? Do you do over unders?
A lot of times I would do something like, you know, the last 2 minutes of a tempo effort, you jump up to VO2 or just over. But pretty much, I pretty much never do efforts by time. I do them by hill.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah. We're here to hear. Yeah, I mean, there's no right or wrong. Do you never ride like at threshold?
Very rarely. Okay. Very rarely would I do like a 20 minutes full.
Yeah.
Like, you know, very limited. Cause I feel like those efforts, I can go super, super deep, but it kind of puts me in a hole. It's kind of like I want to save them for something where I could put my arms up at the end.
Fair. Yeah, my latest running theory, because I kind of came up in the old school, 3x20 was like the, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. And then maybe again in the past 2 to 3 years was doing more over unders. But then I started to lose this like diesel power that I used to have. And now my theory for myself is that like everything in this 95 to 105 range like gets me up to a point where I'm at, but it doesn't really like grow anything. And then adding in the over unders and the VO2 max kind of is that like sprinkles and cherry on top that really like gets me into race form. And I could be full of BS, but I've been working with one of our other coaches, Landry, and it's kind of like a style that he flows with and it's been working well. So now I'm like, huh, I'm curious about this. I guess the biggest thing that I learned was like too much of anything usually never ends well for me. It's just like the repetitive nature. I need some variety at some point. So what else you got going on?
Not a whole lot, man. Just
When do you start racing? When does the racing start? Sorry to cut you off.
April 10th.
Okay.
Redlands. Yeah.
So will you? So will the whole Denver squad go out that? Go to that, or is this okay? So you guys do things besides NCL crits, or that isn't?
Yeah, I think that's a common confusion. So we do pretty much. We'll do Redlands. We'll do Joe Martin. We'll do, you know, the Air Force, the Tulsa Nationals.
Okay.
So I mean, we pretty much do everything that you could do.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you said. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So now I was even looking on, I was trying to get a little bit more familiar on the website. I know Denver's, it's like schedule coming soon. I'm like, let's go, guys. This, like, where are these guys going to be at? So, all right. I'm just thinking through. Have you ever done Valley of the Sun and Tucson Bike Classic?
Yes. I've done very poorly at both. Yeah.
Really? Why do you think?
I think it was actually, I think it was both of them. I was like coming off of a training camp, which for me, racing off of a training camp is not that good. I always feel a bit flat after a training camp.
I kind of want to go out there at some point, and I haven't really done much out west, and I'm like, yeah, it's funny when you're slightly injured. I'm like planning big crusades already for 2025, and someone's like, dude, it's February, we're still in inside on Zwift, you've got time. I'm like, you know, I think also social media, I get FOMO easy. I'm like, oh my God, these people are racing on here. And then you talk to these athletes and they're all like having a good time. I'm like, I want to be there. So you're coaching. How do people get in touch with you if they want to talk about coaching?
It is bassettcoaching@gmail.com. Super easy.
And Instagram, they can slide them in the DMs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Any other topics we need to hit on? I don't want to take up too much of your time, too. I always appreciate chatting with you and chopping it up and seeing what you're doing. I'm a huge Stephen Bassett fan. So I'm excited to hear that you guys are doing more than just NCL crits. I didn't realize that. So this is, that makes sense, I guess, more sense of why some of the riders that are on the team, including you, are there. You guys will have opportunity to go knock heads.
I'm trying to think. I think my biggest thing in coaching actually is just trying to give people like a sense of self-efficacy. So like you should feel empowered, like you should feel like you know what you're doing, and like you know, like your competence and then your confidence, those are kind of tied hand in hand. So like, I mean, I feel like every pro I've ever met, if you told them, hey man, all you have to do to like win a big race is you're gonna have to ride 30 hours a week on the trainer. You can't ride outside, but you have to ride 30 hours a week on the trainer for 6 weeks. Every single one of them would do it. You know, there's no lack of desire. There's no lack of like commitment. Like you'll meet a Cat 4 off the street and they train so hard. Like, so I think the biggest thing is like giving somebody a sense of this is a generally correct model to follow. And if we like correct within that, then that's a pathway where a lot of things are achievable.
I love that. I think also the Cat 4 example, I think sometimes people almost feel badly that they take it so seriously, which is why I love to laugh. I'm like, well, then you make me feel terrible because I take this way too seriously. You should take it seriously. You invest a lot of time into this. Even if, you know, someone's like, oh, I only ride 12 hours. I'm like, go talk to someone at your job and ask them if they exercise for 12 hours a week. Like, dude, this is, you should take this seriously. I mean, you want to go to these races and like, you love this sport. Like, and so I think you're talking about like having them understand why they're doing what they're doing. Also just this journey should be fun. And it's, you know, it's not another job. The hard work that you put in, there's so much to reap from that. Even if you don't win the race, like, you know, maybe you're on a team and you just get to go like slay it with your friends for the weekend.
Yeah. I know you said not to curse me here, but like I always tell people, like, bike racing is just an excuse to like talk shit with people in a parking lot, you know what I mean? it's both. It's like, you know, you should be taking it serious, and you should also be, there is also a lot of community, and you know,
that is the number one tip that I try to pass on. I shouldn't say number one tip, but I do, because I was very shy is not the right word. I was very trying to find an identity outside of my normal life in bike racing that I was like there for results, there to win with my team, there to like prove something to myself, but also get external validation. And I did not connect, like in my own town, I was super close to all the riders. But say I went out to like Massachusetts or something, I was like, show up. I was like, ugh, like, I don't know anybody here. Go race, get in the car and go home. Like the totally wrong way to do it. And it wasn't until I started, you know, one of my friends, I'm actually, I might do Green Mountain this year because I'm going to his wedding. We raced against each other in 2012. It wasn't until we were a tour of Catskills. And I'm like, hey man, I see you all the time. What's your name? He's like, oh, what's up? I'm Andrew. Da, 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 da. And we were like chopping it up. And we actually became teammates 3 years later. But I should have been doing that every race leading up to that. And that was really like a eye-opening experience. But, you know, I think it's intimidation. I think it's, you know, when you start going to bigger races, I was super intimidated by everybody that didn't know. I was like, and I didn't realize a lot of other people were feeling the same way. It just,
oh, yeah, for sure.
It'd just be like, hey, we're at this bike race together in a place 400 miles from both of our houses, and find commonality in that. So, all right, man. Well, good luck this year. I appreciate you chatting. Too. This is good. Some good tips for people. And so April 10th, you said?
Mm-hmm.
It's the first race. Awesome.
Kicks off.
Let's get it. Hopefully we cross paths in the, I know you're a Parkway guy, but get like me to the Tennessee, North Carolina border. You know, Johnny Mitchell?
Yeah.
He's somewhere over in that area. He was riding with Milligan guys. I texted him. I said, can I come be the Steven Bassett to the Evolo crew with the Milligan team? He's like, you're welcome anytime. I was like, awesome. So people know you're out there. Good luck with the Evolo guys. They're very fortunate to have somebody like you.
Oh, yeah. They're so dialed in.
Awesome. Be looking forward
to
watching
them. They're very supported.
Hell yeah. All right, man. We'll talk soon.